Welcome to Vice and Easy, your podcast for all things Miami Vice, with your host, Marina.
Hello, and welcome back to Vice and Easy. Thank you again, as always, for tuning in and for understanding. I did want to start this episode off with a programming note. Just looking at upcoming events for work out of town, I might not be able to release episodes weekly throughout the summer. They might be bi-weekly. Obviously, I will try to do the best I can. And I also want to make sure with this that I am doing these episodes justice, especially once we get to the arc that we're all looking forward to. But first, let's get down to business this week. This week, we are breaking down season 4, episode 15, entitled Indian Wars. Just a, again, another note, this episode was released in the late 80s. I am just playing audio clips, and I'm just reiterating, I know it's not the most culturally sensitive language, but please bear with me. The synopsis on IMDb is as follows. Castillo goes undercover as a drug lord to break up another operation, but things are complicated by a group of paramilitary Indian tribe members who want to stop the ring and restore honor to their tribe, which has been caught up by a ringleader's greed. To further complicate matters, the tribe and the drug lord are about to cross warpaths. Speaking of Castillo going undercover, we start this episode with, again, not the greatest ADR. We just see Castillo driving in a Lamborghini Jalpa. I heard Jalpa and it kind of just like frazzled the inside of my brain. There was this TikTok recently and it was like, you will never guess how this man is going to pronounce tzatziki. And it's like, tzatziki. And your brain just cannot compute. That's how I felt. I was like, I'll just say Jalpa. You can yell at me in the comments if you want. So, and we hear Castillo basically either talking to Crockett on the phone or whatnot. Crockett really wants to get in there and go undercover, but Castillo denies him, says no. This guy, Acosta, that he wants to do business with, doesn't trust Anglos. Hence why Castillo is undercover and why Crockett is back at OCP holding down the fort in Castillo's place. Castillo, however, is loving undercover. Let's hear some of his character, in this first clip.
And you are not in this meeting to sidestep me with your old man, okay?
I'm in this meeting to take care of my cocaine, not worry about your career moves.
So it's not only just the attitude that Castillo has. It is the outfit. He is looking pretty snazzy in turtlenecks all this episode. But you also have to see what Acosta, the guy with the really thick, bad accent, is wearing, with the silk shirt open with the gold chains. And they are there to do business, hence why they're getting a little testy with each other, with Levesque, who is the main guy that they both want to do business with. They end up getting together. They're going to make this deal. They're going to go to this deal. This deal is going to take place at the Orange Bowl, and they can just drive a car in at night while a helicopter comes down. This is actually a really cool scene. I kind of didn't give that enough justice, but like, this is the music that we're getting introduced to this drop off with. That is Hawaiian Chants by Yellow. And as this deal is going down, again, Castillo undercover with Acosta and Levesque and the goons, while the helicopter is coming down, there are men in paramilitary garb, face paint, weapons, the whole thing. The lights illuminate in the stadium one by one, which is super cool. I did make a GIF of it. You can see that in the gallery, in the description, in the show notes. And it just sets up this like really cool, sexy. I know that sounds very dorky to say that, but it does. It like feels very sexy until this paramilitary group ruins everything, shoots and drags out the body of the guys in the copter and fly off with the coke. So what's going on as we end this cold open? Well, let's try to figure it out. At OCB, Crockett and Tubbs talking, and they start to not really get into it, but like they're really trying to figure out what's going on here. Trudy looks great with these big silver earrings. There's no sign of the chopper, but they were able to get a little bit of info on one of the guys.
Dead commando's prints paid off.
John Lockdom, 35-year-old vet, long-range reconnaissance.
That's a LARP. You're lucky you got out at all.
Yeah, LARP stand for long-range reconnaissance patrol, and that is quite skilled. Quite detail-oriented, let's put it that way. And they're going to get Tubbs to talk to someone else on the force who is a Seminole Indian to see if he can provide any knowledge or anything of the sort to help them with their case, even though that's a different tribe. But yes, again, 1988.
Drug runners down there?
No. You in the black community?
Come on, Sergeant.
No, I'm not kidding. It couldn't happen out there.
Why not?
People adhere to the old values. They wouldn't allow it.
They pretty much stayed to themselves out there in the swamps until Chief Jumper took over. He sort of allowed the white man in to buy souvenirs, play bingo, and watch alligator wrestling.
Before we get to alligator wrestling, because I got very excited when I heard this, this is Castillo's boss telling Castillo to be careful in the most American way possible.
Don't get yourself killed. I hate to replace you.
Now let's get back to alligator wrestling. My notes, I got very excited. I was like, is it alligator wrestling, the alligator versus man, or alligator versus alligator? Alligator versus man. And we do get to see this. We get a whole scene later with, it's like a little bit more elegant than wrestling. I'd say like alligator taming, alligator entertainment, alligator dancing. You'll see what I mean. I got lots of gifts and lots of pictures for you. But when Tubbs is now going to go undercover as Cooper, as an academic who wants to study a little bit more of the tribe, and so he goes to visit with Chief Jumper, he recommends that Cooper immerse himself in the culture and learn more about the people. He recommends getting to spend time with a woman named Becky Wells, who has spent time living on and off the reservation, and who he believes would have a good perspective to share with Cooper in his studies. This is Becky Wells, and I really like that this is the first scene we get of her as she's leading a tour on her reservation.
The way it was with the Miccosukee. 10 years ago, we were completely dependent on the federal government. Now more than half our revenue comes from our own ventures. The bingo halls, the sale of tax-free cigarettes. We also built our own baseball field, all without help from Washington. Are there any questions?
Excuse me. May I say something? You should be very happy with what Washington gave you. Many people would give anything to come over here, you know?
Well, since we were here and all of South Florida was our land, we don't feel Washington gave us anything. Thank you for visiting Big Cypress.
I really do like this response, and I really enjoyed the episode. I was a little bored at times, but I really appreciated how in 1988 they were talking about mistreatment of Native Americans and so forth, and generational trauma, and trying to break those cycles on network TV. Again, it was a small step, but I was like, you know what? At least they're giving airtime to what actually has transpired. It's not perfect by any means, but it seemed to be at least one step in the right direction. However, let's move on. Speaking of things that did not age well, Castillo, again, still undercover. I didn't get Castillo's undercover name. Acosta and Levesque are talking. Levesque wants these kids disciplined for interfering with his plan. And, quote, this Indian thing, quote, I also, while they're drinking and talking, I was like, that is a full cognac sniffer, my friend. The whole point is that you pour a little bit in the bottle and you allow the aroma and the flavor profile and the esters to billow out in the glass. Not to fill it. Oh, man. Let me play the clip.
Sir, I have a major drop happening tomorrow afternoon. Please, do you think I can pull this thing off with whatever means are necessary?
Violence is a precious commodity, Anthony. You've yet to learn that.
Yes, sir, but this time is just...
Mr. Melendez, can we depend upon your services for this next round?
Yes, if you can guarantee me his security arrangements.
You have my word, Mr. Melendez. Anthony? You will have no further interruption.
Ah, Melendez. That's Castillo's undercover name. Well, anywho, Castillo and Tubbs are talking back at OCB again now that they are trying to get a little bit more insight into the reservation and what's going on. Gina does look great in white. And they're talking about the elder, Chief Jumper. And that he seems like he's giving back to the community. He seems like he's doing good things for his community and for his people. So, again, like, there's a little bit of crossed wires. They don't know what's going on. So now we get to see the alligator wrestling show. And unfortunately, I guess fortunately, I think two alligators fighting each other that isn't in the wild would be kind of mean and heartbreaking. It is man versus alligator. Nobody is hurt. And we are going to learn how to put an alligator to sleep. Don't try this at home, kids.
So what do you call this?
Survival.
Tommy will next be performing what is called bulldogging.
Yeah, survival.
That means that he will be putting the alligator's chin under his own chin. And hopefully, Tommy is going to be the stronger,
that guy over there?
Too.
That's the chief's son. He'd be a good interview if he'll talk to you.
About 7.5 feet long and weighs approximately 275.
Now, the chief's son, Joe Dan, clocks Tubbs immediately and starts talking to one of his friends. Then we get back to the gator show.
Be careful, Tommy, here in Florida. The next stunt Tommy is going to do is to put the animal to sleep by gently rubbing his stomach. What happens is the blood rushes to the alligator's brain, and because the brain is small, it puts it to sleep.
Now I am just thinking about that scene in The Waterboy in class. We're talking about the, like, medulla oblongata. And then Puffy's like, my mama says that gators are so angry because they got all them teeth and no toothbrush. But we did learn, I believe it had to cut it off because it wasn't a full clip, but that gators don't have a tongue, but they do have a palate. Interesting. And it does make sense when you see that I do have a picture of a gator with its mouth wide open. You don't see the tongue, but you can see, like, the palate in the back, I guess, for crunching and munching. We get some sweet airboat footage in this entire episode, and it does look like so much fun. I've never ridden an airboat. I have ridden like the pontoon boats for alligator tours, but I haven't done like the deluxe alligator tour where it's just like me and a guest on airboat. But like, this episode is really making me crave one. Now back to more serious matters on the reservation. Levesque and Chief Jumper are talking, and it turns out that Levesque has been the one who is, in essence, funding all the new renovations and the medical clinic for the reservation. So we know where Jumper's business ties lie.
Business warranties are sacred to me. I've been generous to your people. Gymnasiums, libraries, medical facilities, food, cash.
The rich can well afford to be generous, Mr. Levesque.
There's no way back, Chief. I invested in your authority.
I expect you to maintain control over your Braves. Otherwise, I cannot be held accountable for the peccadilloes of my associates.
Now, let's touch back on something I mentioned on earlier on the episode. Well, by me, I mean Crockett and Trudy and Gina. The LRPs, or the Long Range Reconnaissance Patrol, we were getting their names basically run through the database to see if there was another or other LRPs living in South Florida. One of them is the chief's son, Joe Dan, the guy that was making not the friendliest of eyes to Tubbs or his undercover alter ego, Cooper. Now, son and dad are very much having a Wall Street moment, if you will.
Hold us out for the white man's drug money. Why?
For the good of the tribe, you know that.
Not the whole tribe.
The vast majority support it.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be too sure about that either.
If I had talked to my father the way you speak to me, he'd skin me alive. In the old days, they had respect for the chiefs.
Would your father have misled the tribe to make this devil's bargain?
He'd have made it in his day to save our people.
Yeah, well, your father earned the respect. It's more than I can say about you.
Now, Joe Dan is going to exchange words with Cooper in just a minute. But first, Becky is a little skeptical of Cooper and of his desire to immerse himself on the reservation with the tribe. I can also understand this. Again, she has dealt with this before, and it's only natural for her to be a little bit hesitant. But Joe Dan and Cooper end up having a very interesting, heated conversation in this next clip.
Well, Washington cuts her subsidies and Tallahassee cuts her water rights. You want to know what's loose? The screw in my father's head. Let an outsider like you get this close.
You think you're the only people of color who have to crawl on their knees in this country? You give me a little trail of tears and I'll give you a little rock. For every Indian massacred, I'll give you a lynching. You had Custer, we've got the Klan. What's the difference?
What are you saying?
I'm saying that you don't have a monopoly on suffering. I'm black, you're red. To the white man, we're both colored. Simple as that. We're both outsiders in the white man's country.
What do you really want?
Like I told Becky, I want to see what the Miccosukees are about. I'd like to get to know you.
Where I live, you wouldn't last an hour without your Cadillac.
Try me.
Now, where Joe Dan lives, keep that in mind as we go through this episode, and then let's revisit that point. Now, Castillo, again, he is really rocking this undercover look. He has these big black shades. I don't want to say it's like almost a mock turtleneck polo. It's really hard to tell. The shading is really tough as he pulls up in this Lamborghini while Acosta pulls up in his DeLorean, and you see the door go up. Obviously, I made a gif of it. And they, again, talk business. Again, he's going to be doing a deal on the reservation. Castillo doesn't want to go with it. Sorry, Melendez doesn't want to go for it. He ups the share up to 5 points. Melendez agrees. They're going to be making another deal. Then we get a great picture of Castillo frustrated on his car phone. It's just such a relatable look. Oh man, OCB also is lit up really nicely in this shot. Castillo asked Crockett to try to get any word from Tubbs. Crockett wants to get out himself and warn Tubbs that this deal is going to be going down, and Castillo won't let him. As Cooper, undercover, is riding in a boat, all the guys on the boat, led by Joe Dan, cut and dump the bags of coke in the water, which leads this very funny observation.
You're gonna make some alligators very jumpy.
Better the gators than the school kids.
And that song in the background is God's Gift by The Silencers. And now we see Castillo with Acosta and their goons about to make this deal as two guys on another airboat pull up. Now at this time, Cooper, along with Joe Dan and some of his goons, are watching through the bushes. The other airboat, with the two mysterious guys we never met before, blows up right in front of Castillo and Acosta. Joe Dan is definitely behind this. So that's a little bit scary. That's something you don't really want to get into. So cut to OCB when Tubbs is explaining what he believes is going on, and that he says that Joe Dan didn't admit to the mine, but why dump all that cocaine? But then he also brings it back like, well, we would do the same. And then Castillo and Crockett bring him back to reality.
The guy dumps 30 keys into the swamps? And that gives new meaning to just say no.
Why? That's what we do.
Yeah, but we get paid for it.
But like I said, the chief thinks that taking the drug money helps the tribe. Joe Dan, he thinks that it poisons their minds.
And it's at this time that the DOD files, Department of Defense files, come in, and they get to learn a little bit more about Joe Dan, that he is a military veteran, awarded veteran, served in Grenada, and was discharged with mental health issues, then called Section 8, namely PTSD. So keep that in mind as we continue through this episode. Also, check out Trudy with her fitted gray zip-up suit with shoulder pads, looking like just a million bucks, as always, but I just really appreciated this. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a picture of just her solo. It's a group photo of them in this suit. Now let's check back in with the reservation. Once again, Joe Dan and his father butt heads, but this time at a town hall with people weighing in, listening in, and seeing their dynamic.
And we applaud the builders of the health clinic. But this pandering to drug pushers will only result in greater pain and suffering for our people.
And when payment is due on the tribal construction loan,
then we'll do as we've always done.
Stop living a fool's dream. You want to live off roots and berries? Go ahead.
It's better than living off the white man's vices.
We already paddle duty-free cancer sticks and legalized gambling. What the hell difference does it make? If the white man wants to kill himself with drugs, let him. We only lease him the land.
That's only half the truth. Tell him.
We've already gone through all of this.
First they rent, and then they own us. You saw them, they treated you like a slave. Is that the kind of world that we want to bring our infants into?
Ooh, then when Joe Dan brings up that things will change, Papa basically brings him down to earth and says that the council members have already voted, thus leading Joe Dan to propose acting on their own against the drug pushers. Interesting, when Cooper and Joe Dan are talking outside, he rightly brings up that Joe Dan is starting a bloodbath. To which Joe Dan responds,
trying to prevent me by taking the law
into my own hands. That's right.
You're starting to sound like my father, Cooper.
Well, maybe your father is right about some things, huh?
What about Little Rock and Selma, Cooper? You folks broke the law of the land for a higher good, right?
Civil disobedience doesn't include blowing people up.
Yeah. Well, the times, they are changing.
Oof, well, okay, let's heat the story up a little bit more because Melendez, a.k.a. Castillo, is meeting with Levesque, talking about making a deal, business, again, worried about any kind of security breaches. That's when Levesque shows him Acosta's dead body floating in an aquarium. I must say, I will give this actor credit for not only holding his breath underwater, but having his eyes open at the same time. Kudos to him. I don't even know how many takes that must have been. And his hands were tied behind his back. Hopefully not actually tied behind his back. I have heard there was this episode of Poker Face with like a horror story of that where a girl's drowning in a like a horror film. And I've heard this, but oh my God, that would be terrifying. So kudos to him. I almost want to make that the episode cover art. And then I was like, ah, that kind of like gives it away if you haven't seen the episode. But when Levesque mentions that that's how he's taking care of him, Castillo starts to worry a little bit about what could go on, especially knowing that Tubbs is currently undercover with the tribe that has been intercepting these dealings. So let's check in back at OCB. Once again, talking a little bit more about Joe Dan and his mental health issues, PTSD, like I mentioned before, and also schizophrenia. But Crockett notices that Joe Dan's checks are not going to the reservation where he does have property. Instead, they're going to a condo in Boca Raton. That's interesting. Now, again, this deal is going to go down. Castillo is dressed, ready to go, again, in that, like, black mock turtleneck, white suit combo that he looks really good in. Crockett looks good with the gray. I call them sexy stripes. Because he has the Henley unbuttoned. But, yeah, Castillo is really killing it this episode. Not just with one outfit, but with multiple outfits. Because, you know, day-to-day at Miami Vice, at OCB, it's just the same skinny black tie, black jacket, blah, blah, blah. But like when he ventures out, like how he did in The Rising Sun of Death, with that turtleneck looking like an assassin, like that's how you do it. All right. Well, unfortunately, Castillo's going. Crockett is having to stay behind. He cannot help his partner at this time. And again, Crockett doesn't like that. But let's see how this plays out. As I'm looking at the gallery at the same time. I'm reading my notes. And it skipped ahead a little bit, so I'll tell you why I was laughing later. But at the reservation, they're loading up their truck with high-tech crossbows. Again, Tubbs is aware of this, and Tubbs really wants to get to the point.
You know, I've been wondering, is it the cocaine that bothers you, or is it the fact that it's the white man's cocaine?
Either way, it's our mission to stop it. And this time we're gonna stop it good.
I thought the mission was to get your father back.
Ooh, that is an ominous note to end that on. Castillo and Crockett are talking on the phone, and Crockett lets Castillo know that he did a little bit of digging into the address on file where Joe Dan's SSI checks are going. Not only does he live in this fancy building, he lives in the penthouse where condos go for $500,000. This is very interesting information. This puts a lot of things into perspective. Castillo was trying to call Tubbs to let him know. Tubbs is not there at the moment, but you know who picks up? Becky. Becky is completely unfazed by this at all, to know that Tubbs is an undercover cop, but lets Castillo know, helpfully, where he has gone. He has gone to Levesque's house to try to get back Chief Jumper along with Joe Dan. Castillo is so thankful for this information and is heading right there because we see that Lamborghini pull up later. But also, while I just want to make fun of a few of these clips, it actually is a really well shot scene. It is just the fact that they're all in like camouflage, the paramilitary garb and black. Tubbs is in a white jacket and white pants to break Like, they didn't give him a heads up. Or be like, hey, man, do you want to change? Like, wouldn't that also hurt them as well, making them seen? But it is a beautiful house, beautiful tennis courts, unfortunately, where these guards are killed. And the reason I was laughing is I have this gif of three of Levesque's goons playing cards, smoking and drinking while you see Joe Dan's guys in the background running across the perimeter of the house. Now, Levesque, he hears what's going on. Again, his goons didn't do anything to help, and a couple of his security guards got killed. Comes out with a gun and is shot pretty quickly with a crossbow. Again, there is a great epic gif of him just flipping over into the pool as his body's there while the pool is filling up with blood as Joe Dan and Tubbs talks. And Tubbs calls Joe Dan out on everything.
Coke that you dumped in the swamps. It wasn't coke. And this wasn't a crusade. It was a power struggle.
Not bad, Cooper. Or is it Cooper?
It isn't. It doesn't matter. What matters is what's happening right here.
Yeah, what's happening?
You're a lucky man, Brother Cooper. I'm only killing white men today.
Ooh, and those tires you hear, well, that would be Castillo pulling up in his Lamborghini to talk with Tubbs. Now Castillo knows the address and that Joe Dan is clearly hiding a lot of money. Let's go see what's going on. As Joe Dan is there taunting his father, who he has tied up in his condo. Does this condo look familiar? Because once I saw the glass blocks, once I saw the pink couch, and once I saw a little bit more of the pink neon lights, I was like, oh my God, this is the condo from Golden Triangle Part 2. And that was just like a little bit, it was at night, so it was illuminated a different way, whereas this in the daytime kind of takes away from some of its charm. But I was like, oh my God, it's not in Boca Raton, it's in Key Biscayne. The exact address. Apartment A1207. So I wonder if they just like loaned out this apartment, rented it out, and just use it for filming. Oh my God, I would have loved to just, that would have now be like an Airbnb experience. I would love it. Like, amazing. I'm sure that some things need to replace, like carpets, and I'm sure the mattress was a waterbed. It could be a real mattress, be like Tempur-Pedic now. You know, maybe some furniture is a little scuffed, but like that would be just such a piece of history. And like all the electronics, like the sound system, the CD changers, the record players, the speakers, the radio, like that would have been so cool. That would have been missed opportunity. But again, we know the apartment number. I don't think they should be putting that on the internet now that we all know. But let me digress. Let's get back to the plot. Joe Dan, again, not bringing a great son to his father. For all the talk about the father going into business with the coke runners, Joe Dan has been the one profiting off of it this whole time. Taunting his father now, saying that he's just going to up and leave, that he's not going to pay for anything that he's done and for how he's treated his father. And it's like, it is a really sad scene.
You're always lecturing, aren't you, oh great wise chief? Me? I'd rather be rich than wise.
Now that's what the hell Rebecca was talking about.
Yeah, that's the stuff. Cocaine. You never saw any, did you? The whole time you're doing business with Levesque for chump change. Excuse me. For the good of the tribe.
I've been a damn fool.
You can say that again, sucker.
Maybe. But I can still go back home. Be forgiven.
But you, Joseph, you're lost, son, lost.
lost.
I'm lost. I'm lost. Who's gonna find you here, old man?
I'm sick of this yap.
And as he's about to leave, while leaving his father tied up in an apartment that may not be checked in for days, basically leaving his father to die, now he's, again, sick of his yapping. So that's when he pulls out the handkerchief or the bandana and gags his father while he's already tied to the chair. Crockett and Tubbs come to surprise him. Tubbs is packing heat. He's already got his gun out. And warns Joe Dan that if he doesn't do as he says, he's going to go visit his ancestors. I'm so sorry I don't have a clip of that line. I really laughed. Again, Joe Dan is doubling down once Crockett and Tubbs come.
Now, you may know what I am, but I'm still a role model to all the young braves. And you're not going to tell.
Tell them what? That the mystic warrior was a freaked out sideshow, and they were taken in.
Nobody held a gun to their heads.
Damn it, boy. A young brave was killed out there for you. Doesn't that bother you?
Ooh, and this is when you can see Joe Dan's face kind of change. Maybe he's really taking in the consequences of his actions.
Yeah, well, I guess I should return the favor.
Hey, come on, man.
Hey, you know what they say, brother, man. Better die a hero than to live on your knees.
And the episode ends with them trying to prevent Joe Dan from jumping off the balcony of his penthouse apartment. We see his lifeless body on the ground as we cut to executive producer Michael Mann in the end of the episode. Whew. Let's go on a little bit more of a lighthearted note and do some fashion. Now, this might be a first in Vice and Easy history. Castillo was not only best dressed, but I have three great pictures of him and two great outfits. The white suit with the black mock turtleneck taking the lead, but there's a great picture of him on his car phone with the green light behind him. Again, you know how I feel about those neon green lights in my episodes of Miami Vice. Then him with the big blacked out aviator frames and the handlebar mustache. Again, kind of a less mock turtleneck. Going to go meet with Acosta as he pulls up in his Lamborghini Yelpa and he pulls up in his DeLorean. Chef's kiss. And you see barrels behind him, like metal barrels. Amazing. Then the picture of him with Levesque and with Acosta, just three different generations of Miami fashion. Let's put it that way. Crockett, I have as the best dressed male runner up, only because I love the exposed chest with the gray stripes. He looks very hunky and it's a great angle of him. Best dressed woman, naturally, it's going to be our girl Trudy. And I really love the black bodycon dress. I love that gray one. But this black one with the three pink buttons on it of her film from above just looks like $1 million on her. And naturally, best decor is going to be our recycled penthouse condo from the Golden Triangle. This time in the daytime. I do prefer it at night, but I still love to see that either someone lived here and rented out happily or that Miami Vice set decorators just got to go nuts, and I love it. Now, with music, we only had two songs in the episode. Hawaiian Chants by Yellow and God's Gift by The Silencers. However, I am going to give it to Hawaiian Chants by Yellow just because it was a really cool kind of vibey way to start the episode. We'll be right back. this was so long ago, but there was this industrial 80s band that used to sometimes play at this the bar that I used to work at. And it was like heavy industrial music. And I loved going to those industrial nights because it's just stuff I would never actively listen to on my own. And that's on insult. It's just, you know, I'm not going to be driving to work and listen. And it's just so fun to dance and just get into like weird industrial music with your friends. And they were such fun nights and I really miss them. Oh, I should actually look one up because there are tons in LA. There was a huge scene here. There is not a lot of Vice tea this episode either. Most of the actors on this episode, one had already worked with Edward James Olmos in Blade Runner, Levesque. Couldn't find any real gossip on them. Patrick Bishop, the actor who played Joe Dan, was also on Magnum P.I. as a bartender and originally born in Japan. Now, I'm trying to think of a way to end this episode. I liked it. I didn't love it. I think there was potential there. And I will commend the writing staff. For some reason, there were 5 writers on this episode. I was like, it wasn't that good. Let's just be real. I commend them for at least bringing light to some of these issues and showing some respect to the Native American community. I think the casting could have been a little bit better, but again, I digress. It's 1988. The steps that we have taken in the past years, still not enough, but it's on the right direction. So I will commend them for 1988, how they handle themselves and how they crafted this episode. I will commend them on that. I did love seeing Castillo out in the wild undercover. It's a nice way to see a little bit more of his personality, his smarts, how he works. Interesting to imagine that Crockett is the one in charge doing paperwork. Like, I know that Crockett always has to do paperwork anyway, but it was just kind of interesting for them to flip. And it's nice to have a tub-centric episode. So with that, I don't know what I'd rate it. Nah, I don't know if I'd watch it again. But I say this because the next episode coming up, I stopped. I was just kind of like had this on the background and the next episode started. And yeah, it is going to be a lot of warnings on that one. That really just got under my skin. I remember I just like shut it off and I didn't watch an episode for a couple days. And I was just like, I'm really not looking forward to breaking down the episode next week. I'm not going to skip it. I will do every episode, but just a programming note. It'll not be a happy one, and you will see a lot of warnings on that one. Yeah, so don't forget to subscribe, tell your friends, and follow me on all things social at Vice and Easy Podcast. Stay with me for the fun episodes, and let's get through the dark ones together. It's not a bad episode. It's just really dark. I'm just warning you all. And on that note, let's go enjoy our weekend. And thank you once again for following, for liking, and for supporting everything I do here at Vice and Easy. I wouldn't be able to do this without the support of each and every one of you.
Hey, man, Miami Vice is number one new show.